All right, everyone. G'day and welcome to the show. Welcome to the Tripod Live recap show for round four. It was a fantastic round of footy. We're going to be with you for the next 45 minutes roughly to break it all down. A close round for the most part, especially with a halftime margin of 6 points or less for every game but one. Unfortunately, it was Finns down at Suncorp this round, Winnie, but outside of that, how was the weekend?
Yeah, outside of that, pretty good weekend for us in terms of punting. Nearly perfect. We won. I'll put the results on the screen as I run us through it really quickly. 1-1 on best bets, starting with losing the opening game of the round, and that's one we've got to talk about. Of course, I've got the score in the top right-hand corner. But we rebounded with that from that very next day, hitting another same-game multi. That's the second from just 4 weeks, $7.50 in the Battle of Brisbane, which we can recap. We won our mixed matchup, even though we didn't go too well on Thursday night footy. Penrith had enough points on the board to actually outscore the Rabbitohs. So $2.40 mixed matchup winner there. And even your take on Toppy pick, Katoa crossing this afternoon, as just about everybody wearing a light blue jersey did. So we're in profit on all fronts for all those different categories of bets. So got to be happy with that for the weekend.
Oh, remarkable. The thing I love with the better same game multis as well is they're always big odds. So whenever you land them, it's awesome. But yeah, only missing the first best bet. But there you go. That is our best bets recap. We'll do that every single top of the show for our recaps, just to be fully accountable. So that's every bet that we place, try scores, mixed matchups, better same game multis, best bets. The reason we do that is to be fully accountable because Winnie has a 9-year track winning record, which I know he doesn't like to gloat about it too much, but personally, I've created content for the last 9 years. I've never seen another content creator in Australia in any sport track their bets for 9 years and come out on top. It can be a tough game for some. Let's jump into the games though, guys. Thursday night, the Parramatta Eels defeated the Penrith Panthers 17-16. I feel like this grand final rematch when he didn't have as much hype behind it because sort of the league went down the Battle of Brisbane route, which I fully get. My MVP was Regan Campbell-Gillard up against his former side. He was up over 250 metres, and he just looked intent on revenge from that grand final. A special mention to both halfbacks as well. Some big moments in that one, Winnie, which I suspect you've got a little bit more on.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is one of the best performances by a team in a must-win game that you'll ever see. So firstly, as well as giving credit to Parramatta, I've got to give credit to yourself, mate. On the back of picking the upset of New Zealand in round three, you said, I've got that same feeling as I had about the Warriors, and I'm going against the grain and going Parramatta, and you got it right, and I got it wrong. Like, you would have got $3.50 about the Eels on Thursday night. I thought they should have been $5 plus. Not that I gave them no chance, but I knew it would take an A-plus display to avoid going 0-4. To their credit, boy, did they deliver one. And you got the money man, Moses, signs the big money long-term deal the day of the game, comes out and breaks the NRL record for kicking meters in a game. This guy has been under a lot of pressure and a lot of scrutiny. He has missed a key conversion in every single game this season, and they've lost them all narrowly. And in this game, goes out and kicks 4 of 4 goals, and of course, the field goal that they need to win. And they needed every last point, obviously. Parramatta nearly flawless, completing 41 of 43 sets in this game. So I say all that to say Penrith weren't even bad. I can't be disappointed in what Penrith displayed. I mean, firstly, they lost Liam Martin before the game started. Sonny Luke looked really exciting when he came on, all for about 3 minutes before he had to go off for HIA, didn't come back. And Penrith still clawed their way back into this from being down 8-0. It was 8-all at halftime. And I was still confident. My best bet, -7.5 on the Premiers. I actually thought if Penrith could have got the first score in the second half, they could have cracked Parramatta because Parramatta was giving everything. I didn't think Parra had any more to give, but they did get in front. And at that point, you know, you're not going to cover the line, but clearly the game was still up for grabs. Although Parramatta up 8 points with 10 to go, probably should have had it won, but that was not the end of the story. Cleary with the deft assist to Hosking. And then, of course, that 2-point buzzer beater field goal shot. I mean, even Brad Arthur himself said, I thought it wasn't our night when he kicked that, because of course that came on the back of a penalty with Paulo sent to the sin bin. So Parra had to go into extra time with 12 men. What were the chances they're going to win? But Penrith comes up with an error in the first set. And of course the Eels do win. As I said in the chat, I think the Eels basically had to win the game twice. And it's just so big. Okay, yeah, I lose my best bet, but I give all the credit in the world to Parramatta. And a positive note for pod followers, if you're on my season multi 11-1, the most shaky leg of that multi. I mean, we've got like Storm to miss the four. It's looking pretty solid. But the most shaky leg was going to be Eels to make the eight. Well, being 1-3 as opposed to 0-4, not only is that just massive mathematically, but they've showed what they're capable of. When you put in a performance like that, you're not just a top eight caliber, you're a contender if you can replicate something like that. So maybe we'll look back at that as a great moment for our 11-1, but I think we'll also look back at it for just the high drama that it was and a match that Parramatta wished they played last October.
And I mean, not only are they now 1-3, but if they were to go 0-4, statistically, no team's ever done it from there. So they'd be going against massive amounts of history there. Not to mix sports, you used the word, I believe, buzzer beater there. It did have real NBA vibes about it, didn't it? Like, you know, when they just go to someone and then nail the big 3-point to win the game. That's sort of the vibes Cleary gave me with there. But in the end, it was Mitchell Moses' night, which, you know, you can only be happy for him because Moses clearly got the better of him in the two finals games last year when it really mattered. And on the back of him reportedly re-signing that big deal to kick the match-winning field goal, to break an NRL record for kick meters, the only thing that could have made this night better for Mitch Moses, I felt, Winnie, is if he has re-signed, if he had just owned it, in the post-game interview, like, yes, I've re-signed here. I love this team. We've shown what we're about. And, you know, this is just the start of a big season for us. I feel like that was maybe the only thing that could have been done better as opposed to the cliche, oh, it's with my manager. Eels first 30, very dominant. Their only blight that I had, at least, was Josh Hodgson's passing game. A lot going to ground there for the Eels. A little bit strange there. I do think they looked a lot better with Brendan Hands on the field, which is not something you say often when we're talking a veteran versus a debutant in such a key position. But that was the fact, I thought, in that game. Eels undid that great work, though, in that last 5 minutes where it just fell apart from them. They did not deserve to go into halftime at all. They were better than that in the first half. And when we got to the end of the second half and they started to really fall apart in that final 10 minutes again, my first thought was, well, is there some fitness issues here, some focus issues? Because the first 30 was pretty good from them in both halves. Really, it was that last 10 minutes. A win's a win, ultimately. I will say the Junior Paulo moment, I've really never seen anything like that. That was just crazy. The game was just, it was done. Just don't go high there, JP, and you've won this one. In the end, I'm kind of glad he did because it was a crazy finish. I will finish with this point. If Penrith went on to win that game, that field goal by Nathan Cleary would be an all-time moment in this sport because there's 26 players on the field. And every single one of them, including Nathan Cleary, know he's the only person that can do this. The pressure that he must have been feeling at that moment and to nail it, it was a pretty cool moment. But unfortunately, it's one that probably won't go down and won't be remembered like it should be, I thought. Friday night, the Melbourne Storm defeated the West Tigers 24-12. My MVP was Cameron Munster. He had a try and a try assist. Special mention to Bateman. I thought he was back to somewhat of his best footy and a great workhorse effort there for him. Dare I say it, Winnie, in the context of this awesome round that we had, this one was a little bit of a snoozer, or do you think I'm a bit too harsh there?
Well, there was some drama towards the end of the game. It wasn't as easy for Storm the whole way, although it looked easy, and I had the same points. I thought Munster just instantly instilling that swagger back into the Melbourne Storm. They're a different side when he's out there, even though they were missing Jerome Hughes. And I had the point there about Bateman that actually looked a lot better in this one because I was a bit worried, what have the Tigers bought? Is he the same player last week? But maybe he was just, dare I say it, acclimatizing. Now, you mentioned before every game this round except for one was within six at halftime. So this was the only one that wasn't. Yeah. But I was going to say every game except one was a 1-12 finish. And that's the only game that wasn't was the blowout we just witnessed in down at Cogra. But of course, this game, the Tigers did pull it back, but firstly, it was Melbourne firing out of the blocks. They scored four tries. In fact, all four of them came in the first half. I liked the back row efforts as well. Eli Katoa, we all knew that he would play well down in Melbourne, and Trent Loiero as well, and King there at lock. None of them took a backward step. But as I say, it wasn't quite job done. If people watched that second half, Appy getting his first try for his new club, a solo effort, kind of catching Meany sleeping, chasing his own kick. They had chances to pull it closer too. The Tigers had several sets when it was 22-12 on the Storm's line, but it's kind of classic Tigers. Even though Papali'i made a big difference in his return, and I said Bateman was great, and he set up the opening try for the Tigers. Just in Tigers fashion, they couldn't execute. I think at one point, They lost a scrum against the feed, and that's why Melbourne kept them at arm's length the rest of the night.
That was definitely one of my points as well. That scrum was just an ugly point of the game where it got repacked. Bateman was reaching over the top trying to grab Storm players. The front row was too busy trying to get his head in a spot where it's not meant to go. And just they just lost focus. And you just can't do that at any level in the at any stage in the NRL, rather. This game was kind of how I expected it to go. The Tigers aren't quite up to the Storm standard, but the Storm with so many injuries means this one was probably going to be closer than what it could have been. Throughout the game, I did think the Tigers shown some glimpse of improvement. I don't want to be too critical towards them, but I also think that there's still a long way to go for this side. And I think there's still a long way to go because they can't have settled on their spine there, surely. Sorry, I just moved my microphone a little closer. They can't settle on that spine because Appy Coruscant is really the only one that's settled and playing consistent footy. So I think they really need to maybe even sit down with Appy as the captain and say, what do you think is going to work around you? Find their best spine combination. And that might involve the hard call of Luke Brooks, sorry, you're in reserve grade, despite the fact we're paying you $1 million. You're just not the best fit for us right now. And then try to find some consistency around that and some spark and build on that. Because right now, there's not really too much I look at this game for the Tigers and say, well, they can build on this or they can build on that. Maybe you could save John Bateman's efforts. But I don't know, from yourself, did you really see any moments in that Tigers game where you stopped and thought, there's a real positive that they can build on that into next week?
No, I mean, when you're chasing the game, you have to throw caution to the wind. And so you almost look like you're playing a bit more enterprising footy, but it's often too little too late. And it was similar to last week, you know, down 3 tries at halftime. And then you're just trying to salvage something. I still go back to the point that in our preseason preview, we gave people the opportunity to get on the Tigers for repeat spooners. I think there's a question about that in the comments. And I think they were $13 to take out a second consecutive wooden spoon, and you'd like your chances with that at the moment.
Yeah, you'd have to like that at the moment. I'd say the Tigers have shown the least of any side. The blockbuster Friday night game, and I don't use that term lightly, this was an amazing game. The Broncos defeat the Dolphins 18-12. My MVP was Payne Haas, who was just incredible in the middle. And let's not forget, for religious purposes, being Ramadan in the Muslim religion, he's not eating all day, he's fasting, which makes that even more incredible for me. And the Hammer, he scored again. He scored in all 4 Dolphins games. Winnie, it didn't go your side's way, but it did go our better same game multi-way. So a real positive there.
Yeah, so let me shed a light on what a sick individual I am. So we know how this game ended. I'm sure almost everyone watched it. If you didn't, you got to at least go catch the highlights. It was a beauty. It was enthralling. Well, maybe not a beauty, maybe not beautiful on the eye, but a high drama for sure. But when this game ended with Stags streaking down the sideline to seal the game, I've said it, I'm a Finns fan since day one, but I was cheering because my true colors revealed. My number one loyalty is not the Dolphins pod, but it is the tripod. So I want the followers of our show to be even happier than the Dolphin followers. And I think I've told this story before, but just quickly, I mean, I grew up my whole life a Broncos fan, but when JT slotted that field goal in the 2015 grand final, I was gone crazy happy because we'd tipped the Cowboys to win the grand final that year on the pod. So that just goes to show I've kind of had to sacrifice my true fanaticism, my true loyalty, because most importantly, I want people who follow the show to know that I'm tipping what I believe will happen, not what I want to happen. So you can be confident. So we haven't had a best bet on the Dolphins this year. If we do, it's because I really think it's the best bet. And in fact, our first bet in a Dolphins game was against them. And we had Brisbane to win both halves, which they did. I mean, it's narrow. They were up only 4-0 at halftime and then won the second half by 2 points by extending the lead. And that's thanks to that Stags try. It was a 2-point game with Brisbane on the ropes right at the end, to be honest. Other legs, we had Jesse Arthurs. Now, that's the second time I've picked a try scorer who didn't just score but scored first. So we got the opening try. So we had that covered. And we had unders in the first half and under 21 and a half. Doesn't matter what it was because it was 4-0. So that was part of it, that there were a lot of errors in this game, which is why I say it wasn't necessarily a work of art. But I think that just summed up how the intensity and how much both sides wanted it. And look, the Dolphins, no moral victories, but boy, were they up against it. We know Kafusi was out, Marshall King was out. They were going to be big outs. Isaiah Katoa was ruled out, so Milford got the start against his old club. But Nikorima is knocked out very early in this game, can't take any further part. Tessie New injures his knee, has to play the whole game on one leg. O'Sullivan, I think broken jaw it was in the second half. And despite all this, and despite falling down 8-0, it was the Dolphins in front, as you said it, the hammer time again. His try put them up 12-8. And they actually had a chance to win this, which is quite incredible. Not many people gave him that chance. I was not fortunate enough to be at the stadium. I'd love to hear from anyone who was, because the atmosphere seemed unbelievable. And it was an opportunity to win, you know, have a historic win for the ages for the Dolphins. But ultimately, Brisbane, as we've said all year, they're a high-quality team. They kept coming, got back ahead off the back of that Capewell break. And as I said, sealed it right at the end to grab the 2 points.
Got a comment here from Jeremy Kerwin. He says that it was game of the round. I have to agree with that. And it is funny because Dolphins do swim in pods. So the fact that you're taking the tripod over the Dolphins pod is actually quite ironic there. But I will say this wasn't the most technical game of football, but games don't always have to be highly technical to be entertaining. And in terms of effort, this game might have had some of the best I've ever seen from both sides in the conditions there. For the Dolphins, you touched on it. It was always going to be hard. No Jeremy Marshall King, no Felice Kafusi, two of their absolute best players. You then factor in they lose Isaiah Katoa that morning. Tessie New, about 70 minutes with an MCL sprain. That's a huge job. Sean O'Sullivan, it was his pec, which is...
Sorry. I can't remember who I was thinking of, but torn pec, that's right.
And so unfortunate because it's been confirmed it's a complete tear, requires surgery. He'll miss up to 12 weeks now. Really, really horrible timing. And then, of course, Nikorima as well. He lasted all of 2 minutes before he had to leave. I do think that led to the combined 29 errors in this game. I've personally never seen that error count that high before. But I do think it was still entertaining. I'm not using that as a negative. You put all that together, I think Broncos will be happy with the win. And I think Dolphins, whilst they won't be happy, they can look at some of the outs they had and some of the decision-making they made under fatigue and think that we're a great footy side and we can go out with the best this year. And the Broncos do look like they are the best so far. So there are plenty of positives for both sides there. I won't say it. Maybe you could make the argument that the better side lost in this one, particularly because there are a lot of, whether you want to call them excuses or unlucky circumstances for the Dolphins, at least in that one. But yeah, the most positive note of the night has to be our Better Same Game Multi. The new bookie on the block, if you're interested in a better account, guys, to prepare for our Friday Same Game Multi next round, you can find the link in the show description now. Saturday, we didn't have the regular three games winning. We only had the two. It was the Cowboys versus the Titans. Cowboys unfortunately defeated my side 24-12. My MVP was Tom Chester, all energy around the ball. Another great showing by the rookie. I thought Dearden, Tino, and Dave Fafita were all fantastic as well. It was a disappointing one for me, Winnie. It was frustrating watching this as a Titans fan. How did you see this one?
Yeah, I can see why you would have been frustrated because this was closer than the score suggests as well. I thought the Titans had some crucial mistakes in moments of the game where they could have taken it by the scruff of the neck. I think back to the first half, Titans on the board early. Your man, Khan Pereira, again. Absolute lightning, Quicksilver, dynamic player that he is. He gets the opening try again. In fact, it's 8-0 to the Titans. They made a break, nearly scored. And I swear they had about a 5-on-2 to the right for some reason. I can't recall who it was. The ball might have ended up in Chris Randall's hands. He stepped back in field, not only lost the opportunity to put it through the hands right and score, but then lost the ball. The Cowboys scored a minute or two later. So instead of 14-0, it's 8-6. You still have a chance to extend your lead when you're up 8-6 attacking in the second half, only to throw an intercept try and Val Holmes takes it the distance that puts the Cowboys in front. And even then, it wasn't game over. It was 18-12 when Nane was sent to the bin. But again, the Titans just couldn't take their chances when they did have the man advantage. And part of that is that the Cowboys were desperate to snap that losing streak. And one of the things I questioned in the last week is, who's going to step up for the Cowboys? Who's going to spark them? And you mentioned it there, that Chester, great, but I thought Dearden was their best and really stood up. And because, you know, Chester scored that late try, which sealed it, but that was like a total fluke of a try as well. Yeah. And I bring that up to say, anyone that had the Titans plus 6.5, I feel for you because you had the right side in terms of the line. They easily could have won, and to not cover the plus 6.5 is a bit cruel, and sometimes it does go that way.
Yeah, certainly. I thought the Titans started really great in this one. We were up by 8 and it was all looking good. But I must say, even as a staunch Titans fan, as soon as Brimson and Foran left at about the 25-minute mark, within 2 minutes of each other, obviously you always cling on to that hope as a fan, but deep down I knew that this one's probably over. Just because the rest of our team doesn't have enough experience yet. Our captain's still very young. Foran has more games himself than the rest of our spine combined. And AJ is our second most experienced player in the spine there, as young as he is as well. So I do feel like people are almost being too harsh towards us online. And not even just like general fans, Titans fans as well were very negative towards our team following this loss. I've got a few examples here, Winnie. You take the fullback in the main half out of any team this round in the first 25 minutes. You take out Walsh and Reynolds. The Broncos don't go on to win. You take out Cleary and Edwards. The Penrith Panthers don't get within 1 point. And you take out Gutherson and Moses, the Eels don't win that game. So I do think, you know, when you put it into context of the losses we had with those two, it was going to be a very tough game to win. From there, the decision-making on attack and defense was just poor. There was no cool heads prevailing. And there was one stage of the game where I counted 6 consecutive penalties to the Cowboys as they come out of their own end. You just simply can't do it. And you can't do it 6 times in a row. You're just making it too hard on yourself. Alofeana Khan-Pereira, you touched on him. Some incredible stats, really. I mean, I think he had 5 line breaks, which is, I think it was a league high this round. I certainly can't think of anyone off the top of my head that had more than him. So I thought he brought a good bit of spark out there wide for the Titans. The key for the Cowboys, though, as we said in the preview show, it's their completion rate. If they can keep that high, they'll win more games than they lose. It's that simple. They're still a classy football side, whilst not at their best or certainly not as good as they looked last year. And it was their completion rate that was keeping them out of games in previous. They fixed that. They had to do it for 10 minutes without Nanai. All things considered, it was impressive by the Cowboys and a much-needed victory for them to prove that they still are an elite side in this competition. And Saturday closed with an emotional game, I would say. The Rabbitohs versus the Manly Seagulls. The Rabbitohs defeated Manly 13-12. Of course, this was a monumental occasion for the Bunnies with the passing of John Sattler. And not only this game, Winnie, but they actually won all 8 games of footy across the whole, every single competition the Bunnies are in, they won this round, which I thought was awesome. My MVP was Cody Walker. He scored both their tries, brought their spark. On the other end, I thought Daly Cherry Evans was pretty remarkable for the Seagulls as well, particularly that intercept. What a moment. We took Manly at the line here, so we do win our best bet here. Was there anything that took you by surprise in this game?
Well, I called it as a coin flip. It went to golden points, so I will get to a moment that surprised me, not in a good way. Firstly, yeah, I thought it was a great and fitting tribute to John Sattler. And look, from a punting perspective, it worried me as well. I'm not sure when that news had broken, but you kind of knew that could give them extra motivation, extra inspiration, the Bunnies, to get that win. And maybe, you know, it did ultimately get them across the line. I would say, although, you know, when you get to golden point, anybody can win. And I won't take away from the Bunnies' win, say they won't deserve it. They didn't deserve it. They certainly scraped home, which was good for us because it was such a tight contest. As I said before, the mixed matchup, we took Penrith to outscore South Sydney. And I think I said in the preview, I wanted 20 in the 20s for Penrith. We only got 16 points. So it was a little light on. But the beauty of the mixed matchup is it's not a multi. We just need one leg to be a little bit more right than the other. So South, I think it's kind of funny, scoring 13 points, obviously celebrating the win. And Penrith devastated going that close. And as you said, that amazing moment by Cleary will somewhat be forgotten. And they're not happy, but they did enough for us. They win the matchup for us 16-13, and that was $2.40. But I actually think not only was Manly a really good bet with the plus, but I think Manly will look back at this game and say they should have won this one because they dominated the first half. You got the South's first try, you said Walker, but it's a fluky try. It's a kick in behind. And was it Garrick or Turbo? I think trying to watch the ball over the dead ball line, and Walker, like a thief in the night, just dives and grounds it a millimetre in. It's not even called a try because it didn't look plausible. But in super slow motion, they can find a blade of grass. He grounded it. So that's South's only try for the first hour of the game. Meanwhile, Manly has one where they drop it over the line. But the moment that absolutely killed me was at 6 all when Manly spreads it, beautiful backline play through the hands right to left and ultimately ends in a try to Turbo, inexplicably ruled or denied for a forward pass. That didn't happen. And go back and watch the replay and you watch every single pass is fine, out of the hands, not even close. And for me, like, I don't want an official bash and I know that they'll get ones wrong. And I'm actually comfortable with the officials missing it sometimes. It happens at high speed and the refs running along and can't get the right angle and might not see everything. But how do you call something that you didn't see because it didn't happen? That's the part that really blows my mind. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. You should be allowed to challenge and the video ref should be allowed to rule on forward pass because we can figure everything else out. So I don't want to hear it that the angles are deceiving or that it can drift. We can watch a replay. We know when there was no forward pass or when there was. So if we can, why can't the bunker? But DCE did catch an intercept and score right at the end of the first half. So I'll just call that nothing but justice because Manly got the 6 points they deserve from that. So I think they deserve that lead. But Souths, just like they've done, even game one, even opening game against Cronulla was level scores second half. Souths kept coming. They were down big against Penrith. They didn't give it in. They were down against Roosters. They fought back to the end and nearly had a shot. And they did it again here. Never gave in. Obviously forced the game into extra time. I thought Kolo Matangi, they were so short on middles. They played him at prop, but he did really well. Tom Burgess, big game as well. Cam Murray had some errors. I think he threw that intercept, but he's always a workhorse. And I give a shout out to Damian Cook as well that had a great game before, of course, it was the less heralded spine member, Ilias, that iced it with all eyes on Latrell Mitchell.
I like your point about the Bunnies fight back. That's been there for every game, certainly. But I do sort of raise the concern that is this too fatiguing a style for South Sydney? E.g., can they continue to have Murray and Cookie making 50 tackles every week and still be this fresh and competitive come rounds 20 to 27? Because we do know it's a longer season as well. Some of those players might even play for the Blues as well. So there is a question mark there for the Bunnies, but it's a positive for now. I think both sides will probably leave this game with positives. If you're Manly, I think you look to the, the high tackle on Latrell Mitchell, which wasn't too much in it by the letter.
There's
of the book.
Nothing there, in it. That's right. And in fact, it wasn't it a forward pass from dummy half that he got the ball off as well? And then there's like nothing in the tackle and they got the 2 points to tie the game.
And you look at that and you just think that if you're Manly, you think, well, we've been dudded there. I know they certainly think they were dudded with the forward pass and I agree that they were. So there's a lot of things.
You know what? I did something across my mind. This is not how it's meant to work. But they won the game against Parramatta and there was a forward pass not called. No, the forward pass called on Gutho's ball to Campbell Gillard that shouldn't have been forward. So this is maybe the footy gods coming back and burning Manly and calling it square. It doesn't help us because I wanted Manly to win. I had them head-to-head in a multi as well.
And it is funny too because footy fans, God bless us, we'll never have long-term memories, remember. Oh, but we got the rub of the green last week. It's tough because right. You want to hold refs accountable. But as you said, over a season, you're going to get some good calls. You're going to get some bad ones. It's just the way it works. For the Bunnies, I think their positive comes from the fact that they can stick with any side defensively. They missed almost double the amount of tackles than Manly, but their scramble was really good and their effort was really good. I mean, they could barely walk by the end of the game. I've already touched on the reasons I thought Manly were unlucky. For Rabbitohs, I do have a slight bit of a negative take here. I thought when attacking the line, it almost looked like they were just waiting for individual brilliance. In this game, it did come in the form of Cody Walker. However, I agree with you. One of those was very lucky. Millimeters in that. And they were sort of looking for Cody Walker, Latrell, your typical big game players to kind of just make it happen. They didn't look like a team that was playing as connected as Manly were. Manly looked really great in that front. Whether the scoreline, you know, probably doesn't sum that up too well. Latrell Mitchell was relatively poor in this one as well. Speaking of South looking for someone to break it open, his only positive attacking stat was the one offload. So again, that's a negative in the context of this game, but it's a positive long-term for the Bunnies when you add all this together and the fact they were still able to walk away with the win. I'll finish on this. A real shame for Josh Alloyer. He was playing good. I mean, he came up with that sort of Ben Hunt style knock on in Golden Point where as soon as it happens, you know, that's probably game. But prior to that, he had 120 plus meters, 31 tackles for zero misses, and he was traveling along really well, and he looked really strong in that one. We go to today. We had the three games today, guys. We opened with the Warriors versus the Bulldogs. The Warriors defeat them 16-14 in a close game that I was disappointed in because I tipped the Bulldogs and I thought they were pretty close in this one. My MVP was Sean Johnson. Not only was he my MVP, the Bulldogs coach, Cameron Serrato, has since come out in the post-game press conference, I believe it was. He said, what was the difference tonight? And he said, simply, Sean Johnson. I think that's a pretty big rap from the opposition coach there. Jackson Ford was quietly underrated as well. Winnie, I got my tip wrong. You took the Warriors, I believe, in our preview. What did you think of their performance?
Well, lots of our followers have thoughts on their performance because I think half the comments that have come through, as I've seen, half of them have been about the Warriors, even though generally people will talk about the game that we're discussing, but I just keep seeing people chatting Warriors. So people are excited. They're 3-1. You know, it's great to heap a bit of praise on Sean Johnson, but I wonder if there's deeper meaning to that. If the difference is the halfback of New Zealand, you know, Bulldogs are filling out a roster, but are they settled on their halfback? And, you know, they've got Crichton coming next year to fill fullback. Burton's a star at 5'8". They've signed Reed Marnie, but do they need a better halfback? I know Flanagan has copped a fair bit of criticism and scrutiny over his career, and maybe not all of it is fair. But in these tight games, your halves play can be the difference. And someone actually put the exact wording I was going to use, vintage Sean Johnson, in this one, because he looks like he's enjoying his footy and scoring the winning try at Mount Smart. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. That's like winding back the clock. Another interesting stat about the Dogs, they're the only team in the competition that has not scored a point in the final 20 minutes of any game this season. So it does seem to be a bit of a trend now, because the Doggies had an 8-point lead in the second half, and that's why this is a really impressive win by the Warriors. Like, you can say that the Dogs were in a position to win that and shouldn't have let it go, but I'm impressed by the Warriors, especially when Toho Harris was injured and ruled out of the game and couldn't come back on. New Zealand, we said this about them last week. You know, in fact, they've trailed in every game, but they came back and beat the Knights, and they were down in the second half, and they were down twice against the Cowboys last week, came back a win. They're staying composed and they're staying patient, and they're finding openings, and ultimately they did leave it kind of late, but they did come over the top of the Bulldogs in front of their home faithful, and then once they hit the front, they were able to hang on and defend really stoutly, which is something you couldn't always trust Warrior sides of old to do. And another player I just single out would be Jackson Ford coming back into this team. Thought he was really immense for them, back from injury and bolstering that pack. How did you see this one?
Yeah, pretty similar to that, actually. I will say on the Warriors, just their defense was really, really great to see. Jackson Ford, a great player. And I mean, we'll talk about the Dragons later today, but another questionable decision to let him go. And for a quick story, I have spoken with the Titans executive chairman a few times. There was a Dragons player a few years ago in New South Wales Cup, absolutely killing it. I won't name him, but he led the league in meters, post-contact meters, hit-ups, and was top three for tackles. He couldn't get a chance in the NRL. I actually told our Titans chairman about him, said we should try to sign this guy. So Jackson Ford joins the long list of players that depart the Dragons and don't get to realize their potential at that club. Bulldogs, they shot out of a cannon in this one, and when they got to 8-0 up, I started to think, okay, I'm going to get this tip here. The Doggies look good. I knew it wasn't home and done, but I certainly was feeling good at that point. But the Warriors did stay poised and patient. They certainly didn't hang their heads and, you know, drop out of this game. And I do put a lot of that to the home crowd advantage. I thought the crowd was vocal, awesome, and really behind their team. The Warriors' goal line defense in particular was superb. I can't give them a big enough rap for that. But I do think a smaller element of that, and please, I'm not taking anything away from this, as a small element, was the Bulldogs really struggling to create much. Viliami Kikau was criminally underused out on that left edge. I don't think Flanagan offered too much in attack with his passing. Neither did Hayes Perham. That really left Marnie and Burton to pick up the crumbs. And by that stage, it was a little bit too much pressure on both to create anything meaningful there. Throughout this game, I kept taking notes of bunker or referee blunders. And I've just come to
a couple of controversial moments in this one, wasn't there?
There was. And I've just come to the decision where I'm going to say it was an off game for the officials, but the better side won. And hopefully people can agree with that, because there's the strip.
Was there one or two moments you disagree then?
The biggest one I disagree with was the Sean Johnson final try. Because although I think, using common sense, my personal opinion is that's a try, Reed Marnie was never going to stop him. He was clearly obstructed. And the rule does say you can't do that. And so I'm fine. If you want to use common sense, no worries. but you need to apply that every time, which the officials don't. So I think the Bulldogs could feel unfair there. The stripping call in the first half, which dudded the Warriors, that was rubbish as well.
See, that was a huge moment. The Warriors were about to score. Kickout strips the ball. It's then the Warriors regathered it and scored, but they called it a knock-on. The very next play is Adokar 90-meter try off a scrum. So it was a 12-point swing. But I think, personally, I know there's way more Warriors fans in the chat. I personally think they got that call dead right. I think Kickout stripped at the ball, but he basically pulled Pompey's hand off the ball rather than pulled the ball out. So for me, actually, I thought it was clearly right. I heard people saying it was a shocking call. I disagree. And as for the try that decided the game, I think letter of the law, Adam Fanua-Blake did bowl over Marnie, but he wouldn't have got there most likely, or he wouldn't have stopped Johnson. So it's what you said, basically. Letter of the law, wrong call, and Bulldogs would be a bit salty, but agree the right team got the try and got the 2 points as well.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Let's use this as a line in the sand moment from here. If it's a common sense call like that, officials, let's just stick by. That makes sense. The energy from the Warriors in particular in the last 10 minutes was awesome as well. And I just felt like the Bulldogs couldn't match it. They had opportunities to win. The Bulldogs, correction, they had plenty of opportunities to win, but they just didn't have the right energy there. And I sort of reiterate my thoughts that the Bulldogs kind of are playing with half a spine at the moment. Kyle Flanagan's not their long-term halfback, and Parham is certainly not their long-term fullback. They're kind of just filling in until they get the future recruits or until Carl Olapau, gets a little bit more experience in reserve grade. Look, I tip the Bulldogs here against the stats, so maybe I'm being a little bit salty and just disappointed in that loss, but I do think they were really poor and had a lot of opportunities to win that. Full credit to the Warriors, though. Andrew Webster had them up for this, and he was the coach out of the two, remembering both were assistant coaches to Ivan Cleary last year. We never heard a peep of any club interested in signing Webster. They were all interested in Serraldo. So a nice win for Andrew Webster there, and definitely a nice touch for the Warriors returning to Mount Smart, getting a great win there for their home fans.
I like the post you just put up of the banner in the crowd. We got the better Penrith assistant coach for the Warriors.
That was awesome.
And before you jump into the next game, Raiders Knights, we do have a little clip to hear how the bookies went this weekend from Tristan. So I'm not sure if you had a prompt for that, but we might as well play it right now, hey?
Hello, punters. Tristan here from Top Sport. Another topsy-turvy round, particularly to start the round off where the Eels got over the top of the Panthers. That one was a decent result to start the round from our perspective. A couple of the big goes saw the Broncos very, very well backed against the Dolphins. So they failed to cover. So we had a little result on that. Obviously, the multis running through the Broncos head-to-head would have been massive. The Dolphins could have held on to win, but not to be. Our worst result by a considerable margin was the Rabbits against the Seagulls, where we took a lot of money on the Bunnies to win the game and then also Manly to cover the start. So that obviously fell on that dreaded split. So that one was by far and away our worst game. It's another a really, really high quality weekend of rugby league. So looking forward to seeing what next weekend brings and hope you're back to winner and, of course, gambled responsibly.
Thank you very much to Tristan there for that exclusive market insight. Toppy, they are our show sponsor, guys. And if you want to sign up and take advantage of our mixed matchup, which we did win this week, and prepare for next rounds, our sign-up code is TPLIVE. Message the Tripod page on Facebook and let us know if you've signed up. And the split that Tristan mentioned there, Winnie, that there from a punting perspective is where the head-to-head wins, but the line also wins. Is that quite common this year, or is that a pretty uncommon occurrence?
It just depends how big the spread is, because if the spread's really low, then it's less likely it can fall. But it often can be a case where most people will put the favourites head-to-head in their multi. So Toppy always likes to see a few upsets, and there were a few upsets to be fair, but in certain games, a lot of the sharp punters and bigger bets come for the underdog with the plus. And then a worst case scenario for Toppy, they say either they want the underdog to get blown out or they want them to get the outright upset. And in that Rabbitohs Manly case, it was worst of both worlds, falling right in that margin in between where the Rabbitohs won, but Manly covered the game.
A tough one for the bookies. Punters 1-0. Earlier today, we had the Knights v. the Raiders. The Knights defeated the Raiders 24-14. My MVP was Lachlan Miller, who was just simply electric out the back there. Special mention to Greg Marzu as well. It hurts my heart knowing the Titans lost him, but no Knights ever scored a hat-trick on their club debut. He scored two and came pretty close there. I don't think either of us tipped this one winning due to the Knights' record of before this game. They were 1-12 at McDonald Jones recently. I do remember in the preview you spoke that you do believe there was a home ground advantage there, and in the end, their fans seemed to get them home there. Your thoughts on this one, please?
Yeah, the reason I didn't tip Newcastle, it's not because I thought they're really terrible at home. I thought they'd try hard. I just thought they're still lacking a bit. Like, you remember Ponga, at least we heard some good news, some progress. He's gone to Canada and they can do more advanced testing. And, you know, if they've got more things to worry about, then that's not what we want to hear, but they can treat that. And we're all hoping for good news. And maybe if there's good news, you know, he can return to this side. Maybe my most improved bet's not the worst bet you've ever heard now. They're 2-2. And Newcastle's another side that's been in every game this year. And they've had a massive toll of injuries and suspensions. Now, in terms of players in and out, it went their way today. Jamal Fogarty was ruled out for the Raiders, which is a big loss for Canberra. And Frizzell came from the reserves and joined the Knights. So that actually worked in Newcastle's favour and meant that the line closed 4.5, where when we looked at the game, it was 7.5 on Wednesday. So I definitely felt like Newcastle had a real chance. But then the Raiders scored first, and the Raiders scored, again after Marzu scored. And they were pretty soft tries to Young and Wyden. And I thought, oh, no, you know, Knights gave up 36 last week to the Dolphins. That, you know, the defence is just not tough enough. But they didn't concede again. They didn't concede a try again after that point. And the game flipped in the second half. Maybe part of it was just this really strong breeze at their backs. But give credit to the Knights coming out guns blazing, scored a quick 12 points to actually go from 6 down to 6 in front in the second half. And then Whiten was sin-binned for a high and late shot, kind of like a jumping shoulder charge on Hastings contesting a kick. And the Knights scored directly from the ensuing penalty against 12-man Raiders because, as I say, Wyden got sent to the bin. So then it looked like the Knights could blow out the Raiders. And I was most impressed by Canberra once they were down 10 and down a man. They actually fought back and got close several times. But ultimately, Papali'i was back in this game. And I mentioned, like, Ponga's not there. Adam Elliott's not there. Daniel Saifidi, or is it Jacob Saifidi, is suspended. They've still got a few out, Newcastle. I think it just goes back to what I've said over the last month. It's like the Raiders aren't that good. They won last week at home against Cronulla out of desperation, but they're not better than Cronulla, that's for sure. And, although they had some shining light performances, I thought Seb Chris did pretty admirably well. He's not a natural fullback, but like Miller, I thought both fullbacks did really well, strong in kick returns. A lot of outside backs had good games. Even Timoko for the Canberra, again, such a handful, but for the Knights, leading them to victory. I thought Bradman Best and Dane Gagai were both so threatening on edges. And, of course, Marzu on his club debut outside. And, I'll go back to the fact that I picked the Knights to finish higher on the ladder than the Raiders at the start this year. And that's before I knew all the carnage that was going to ensue and all the players are going to lose. But maybe now people could see why that wasn't so crazy.
It was a very important win for the Knights. You think that Adam O'Brien's position is certainly nowhere near safe and secured. I wasn't so keen on them as well because at that stage, Daniel Saifidi, last game, he left the ground literally in a sling and it looked like he was out for 3 to 4 weeks. So without him, I wouldn't have gone near them. And of course, even I said Frizzell might come back, but I still wasn't that keen on him. At all. Really hard to get a read on the Raiders this year. There's games where they've led, there's games where they've chased, there's games where they've looked awesome in moments and shocking in others. Really tough to get a read on them so far. I will say in the preview show, there was a stat that both Hudson Young and Bradman Best had scored 3 tries in their last 3 against each other. They both scored again within the first 20 minutes. So that'll go to 4-4 for them. Lackluster first half. I really didn't know what notes to take. I didn't know what to say. The only really moment I had was the Whiten try, where I was just left scratching my head. He slipped over, no one tackled him, and then he just kind of just walked over to score. It was very, very strange. I did take a note after the first half that the Knights have not gelled in their halves yet, Hastings and Gamble, and their spine's not really working together. In the end, I was proven wrong with their second half, where they scored, was it 3 or 4 tries just after halftime? It might have been 3. But they basically just exploded.
Yep, 3 tries.
So it was 3 tries in a period of 10 minutes where they just exploded. And in the end, that was the difference. At halftime, the Knights were ahead in every statistical area. There was some talk that Jack Whiten should have been sin-binned for his shot on Miller. subsequently he was sin bin. So, I mean, could there have been a double sin bin there? But I do wonder, did the Knights get a rocket at halftime? Because they were more creative in the first 6 minutes of the second half than they were the whole 40 before. Something really switched in their attacking mentality. And whatever it was, I hope the staff are able to identify that, narrow in on it, and build some consistency around that. Because for that period there, I thought the Knights looked awesome. And in turn, the Raiders really lost their spark off the back of it and seemed to be a little bit frazzled throughout their 1-17. Whiten was really the only one that was creating many opportunities at all for them. But yeah, I have to go back to that moment in the second half when to open it. That was where the Knights won that game. A really, really special period of play for them. Last game of the round was the Dragons v. the Sharks. 8-40, the Sharks get up there. A bit of a surprising result for some, I suppose, and certainly the biggest margin we had this round. My MVP was Nicho Hynes. I don't think anyone's too shocked to hear that. He was just superb returning. Did you expect a scoreline this big, or did even the 32 points take you a little bit by surprise?
Yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised how bad the Dragons were. I wasn't surprised how good Cronulla are. I know they're a good side. It's one of those ones you kick yourself. I had it in my shortlist. So close to playing Cronulla, -5.5. I know it's easy for me to say that, but you go back and listen. I talked about being close to playing Cronulla, and I put them on the shortlist of teams you could pick a player to score a try from, which you did, and you picked Sione Katoa. And he looked like about the only one that wasn't going to get in on the action, but he scored their last try, maybe their second last. So he cashed it. So take on Toppy. Clarkie's try scorer picks are in profit for the year because you're 2 from 4. Today was a double up, but in round one, getting $3 odds. You know, and the funny thing is the Dragons led in this game. They were up 8-6. And then I don't know what can I say about the Dragons that's not too harsh without saying they were useless the rest of the game. Look, I'll try and make it positive. I love how aggressive the Sharks are. You know, you bring Hynes back in. What I mean is they're not afraid to play footy. They're really not afraid to throw it around. And their strength is their outside backs. And because they're willing to shift early and often, they bring these guys into the game. And there's risk and reward with that because Cronulla had a lot of errors in the first half. They went into halftime leading 12-8, but completing under 60%. I thought that was really ominous for the Dragons. Like the Dragons are thinking, we're in this game, but you're only in it because of the amount of errors the Sharks were making, and some of them, you know, really early in the set errors. So what happened second half? Of course, Cronulla come out, hold the ball a bit more, but kept attacking. And yeah, just a not good old-fashioned carve-up. And I've talked to a couple of people about the Sharks and, you know, what's their ceiling. They came second last year in the ladder. No one really thought they were the second-best team. You know, are they a true premiership contender? I look at this side and think, like, not one of them is going to play Origin this year, probably. I know Nicho Hynes won the Dally M's, the star, and maybe he could be utility value. In fact, someone commented you could play him at 6.5 over Luai. Maybe he's a better player than Luai. Where do you lose that combination? You consider it because he is that good. But what I'm getting at is you can't win the comp if you don't have, like, a few Origin-caliber players. So that's the question mark. Do the Sharks, are they still a year away? Do they need to recruit? Or I'm keeping my close eye on people like Teague Wilton and particularly Britton Nakora. Maybe they have Origin caliber players. These guys are just going to get to another level this year. And if they do, they're going to be hard to handle and they're definitely going to be, you know, around the top four. Well, what do you make of them in terms of Cronulla's ceiling and what they're lacking, if anything?
I think they are premiership threats, but I kind of look at it as it's almost a benefit they don't have those Origin players. They still do have rep players in their side. Like, you know, there's Nakora, Mulatalo, Braden Hamlin-Ualli. They've all played for the Kiwis. So there is that element as well. So yeah, I view it more as a positive for the Sharkies. I think over that Origin period, they might be able to rest.
It is a positive for the regular season, but I look at it like the best teams always have like superstars. Now you can call Nicho Hynes one when you win the Dally M. But, like, who else are kind of the match winners? But I think you did name a couple there. Whether or not you play for New Zealand or Samoa or Australia or, you know, Queensland, New South Wales, I think of it more like players who would get picked in Origin if they were eligible, you know, that caliber. And I feel like the Sharks don't have many, but because some of those guys are young, they can probably reach that level.
The interesting thing there is I hear the rep argument you're making, but here's an interesting one from that. Andy Raymond, I recall with him every week, and he told me that Daly Cherry-Evans told him whenever he looks at two teams that are going to play in the finals, He looks at both their 17s and he says, whichever side has more informed players will win. And that's coming from DC, someone who's won a premiership, played for his state, country, etc. So certainly, you know, whoever's in form, and as you touch on, who has that rep experience in the big games, God, it helps so much when it comes down to the finals. You also mentioned the Sharkies being a little bit off in the first half. I had a note here saying that they look like a team intent on losing, and Nicho Hynes was their only shining light. Well, ended up being a bit more than a shining light. He was a, I don't know what to say. He was, I can't think of anything.
Revelation.
Yeah, he was, I'm lost for words. That's how good he was. He was absolutely brilliant. I do think the Sharks are a finals bound team, a top four bound team. Not that this game so much really strengthens that opinion. I thought it in the preseason, but certainly it provides me confidence and solidifies that they are a side that I believe will finish in the top four and therefore are a chance of going a little bit better than they did last year. For the Dragons,
and as for the Dragons, I know you're about to touch on them, but that's the other point I meant to make. Like, they're at home. They played pretty well last week. It's a derby game. Like, it's arguably their biggest home game of the season. Like, what's the excuse to go that badly? And we just talked before about, you know, the Tigers would be quite short odds to get their second spoon back-to-back. But do you put the Dragons in that conversation? Because they were deplorable today.
They were my preseason pick. A little bit rich of me to harp onto it since they did beat my Titans. But I just think over 27 rounds, they're not going to have that consistent energy. And the thing is for the Dragons, as soon as Ben Hunt goes, if Ben Hunt goes down and if he has to take weeks off during Origin, they're not winning without him. They're simply not. He is, there's just an over-reliance there on his brilliance. And even last year when he won, was close to the Dally M medal and won an Origin series and was in prime form, that wasn't enough for him to play finals. So I don't know how much more they can change. And realistically, Winnie, I have to raise a question about their attitude. The head drop in this game when the Sharks took momentum was the exact same as the head drop that occurred one week earlier against the Broncos at Suncorp, of course, in that final 10-minute period where they just got ran over. As soon as the Sharks took momentum in this one, the Dragons did not look like a side that wanted to fight and win that momentum back. For the pride of themselves, their fans at home. It was a big occasion. They looked like a side that said, you know what, this is getting a bit too tough, just like they did with the Broncos game, and said, well, we're going to call it there. And it looks like they gave up. That's exactly what it looked like to me. Not a good thing to be saying about a side so early in a season when their head coach is under pressure. It's just not going how the Dragons wish it was going at the moment. But I think we'll leave it there before Dragons fans come knocking on our doors. Anything else you'd like to add for the round before we wrap up this show?
No, I think you said it all there. Sorry to end on a dull note there with the Dragons. But you're right, it's early in the year. Everyone should be excited. They've already had a win. But this will happen too. You're going to get teams that just have stinkers. And what we got to identify when we preview the games on Wednesday, as we will in 3 days' time, is what's real and what was just went a team's way or went against them on the day. So, can't believe we're already a month into the year, but excited to tackle round 5 with you on Wednesday, mate.
Spot on, mate. It's been a great start to the week. Thank you guys for being here with us. Hopefully everyone has a great week ahead. We will see you all on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time to preview round 5 of the NRL season. Thank you very much.
Lego.